The 2006 Survivor Series, one of my personal renditions of the Survivor Series event. With this year's happening this Saturday, we're going to do our little retro review of the 2006 Survivor Series, November 26, 2006, from the formerly known as Wachovia Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. All right, what is going on, guys, and welcome back to the Ruthless Discussions podcast. This is your second podcast drop it today after technical difficulties last week. I'm doing double uploads today, so earlier this morning on your Thanksgiving, which, by the way, happy Thanksgiving. If you didn't watch today's, the first podcast going up today, but this morning we uploaded what was supposed to be last week's podcast, the top 10 greatest rivalries of the Ruthless Discussion, Ruthless Aggression Era, so you guys can go check that out. And then tonight, we're going to go back on our regularly scheduled program, if you will, and we will be talking about the 2006 Survivor Series. And I specifically wanted to talk about this event this week in the lead-up to Survivor Series because I attended Survivor Series 2006. It was the second ever show I ever went to in person. The first one was back in January 2006, which was the SmackDown where Batista relinquished the World Heavyweight Championship and Kurt Angle won the world title in the main event. So we're going to be going through the 2006 Survivor Series today. I just watched it a little bit last night, a little bit this morning, the time I'm filming this. So it's super fresh in my head. And of course, I've seen this show a million times over. So I'm actually going to show you guys a couple of things that I have here, my ticket, some merch that I picked up at the show in 2006. We'll get into all of that in a second. But before we get into this show, I want to remind you guys about the channel memberships right here on the No Nation Wrestling YouTube channel. As you guys can see on your screen, we have two tiers. The first being the Backstage Pass tier, which gets you badges and emojis that you can use in live chats and comments right here on the videos. You're also going to get some discounted merchandise, my merch store link down below in the description, and you'll also get early access to brand new videos, and that does include the Ruthless Discussions podcast, as long as it's up, you know, 24 hours in advance. Sometimes things go up last minute and there's no time to give you early access, but that's options there, the Backstage Pass. And then there is also the tier up, which is the Premium Pass, which gets you all those other previous perks, as well as one bonus Ruthless Discussions podcast episode each and every month, at least one. Maybe there'll be more, I don't know, remains to be seen, but that's going to kick off in the month of December. So hit that join button down below, and if you can't become a channel member, just hit that like down below. Definitely hit subscribe as well. Definitely goes a long way in helping us grow here on YouTube. Alrighty, but let's get into the 2006 Survivor Series event. So again, first things first, I want to run through a couple of things here. So I do have my ticket from the show, section 215, row 14. This is seat 16. Guess, you know, I think like my entire family plus one of my uncles went to the show, so that was six seats getting taken up. But SmackDown vs. Raw 2007 presents Survivor Series, formerly known, as I mentioned, as the Wachovia Center. Now it is the Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Sunday night, November the 26th, 2006. There's the ticket right there from the show. I don't know, it's an old ticket, so it's a little bit beat up. There's a couple tack holes in it, because when I was a kid, I pinned it up on the wall because I thought it was super cool. But luckily, I still have it. I have a ticket from every single show I've ever been to. I mean, minus like the last couple of years, like some of my tickets haven't been obviously digital, like the Extreme Rules 2022. I went to that show. I don't think I have a physical ticket. Those are on my phone. And next year's WrestleMania tickets, WrestleMania 40, those tickets are digital. So, I mean, maybe I could print something out so I have it. But besides some of these newer events where my ticket's digital, I have physical copies of every single show I've ever been to. WWE, TNA, I think AEW was both physical tickets. Two AEW shows that I went to were both physical tickets, and like a ton of independents. I have a ticket stub. I probably went to over 30 CZW shows within a span of a few years back in the day, and I have every single ticket stub. We could do a whole video just running down every show that I've been to, but very cool that I still have this all these years later. Also, I have a couple of pieces of merchandise to show you. Now, first things first, and this is 2006, so I was 7 years old, about to be 8 come January 2007, so this shirt is a size small, but I do have the event shirt from that night. Literally just pulled it out of my attic this morning because I wanted to show it to you guys, but here it is right here, the Survivor Series 2006 event shirt. I'm pretty sure, well, I know for sure that during this day and age, they were putting, like, event shirts like this on WWE Shop in, like, a combo. You can get the shirt and the DVD. I know because I got a couple of them from Unforgiven, No Mercy, and Cyber Sunday from 2006. I got them all for Christmas that year. I don't know if it was the same event shirt as the ones they sold in the arena for a little bit different. I don't know, but I know I got this one at the Wachovia Center that night. So there is your, front of it there. A little bit of a variation of the DVD cover. And then, you know, Booker, Batista, bunch of guys on there. Taker, Flair, just a bunch of guys that were on the show. Cena, Benoit, cool stuff. And then you have the back of the shirt as well, which has got your full match card on there. Survivor Series, Sunday night, November 26th. And then your all your matches and whatnot, your logos at the bottom there. You see you got the Wachovia, what's that say, Wachovia Arena? I don't know why it says Wachovia Arena, it's Wachovia Center. Nonetheless, SmackDown, Raw, ECW, WWE.com, and WrestleMania 23, which of course we were leading up to. So yeah, I still have this shirt all these years later. Obviously, not something that I could wear anymore because it's a size small, but certainly something I will always keep in my collection. So we got that, which I of course got that night. And I also pulled out this DVD off my shelf because I also bought it that night. Well, I didn't buy it, but you guys get the point. I got it that night at the merch stand, and it is this D-Generation X DVD. I was huge on DX when they made their return in 2006. I know that's some people's like least favorite run, but I was 7 years old. You got Triple H and Shawn Michaels running around doing funny stuff. At least I thought it was funny, yelling suck it. I was a huge DX guy. This was obviously based off like their Attitude Era stuff, this DVD. And it's only a single disc release, but it's got some cool stuff on here. And I remember, correct me if I'm wrong, yes, this is the first time I saw the Shawn Michaels Triple H European title match, which is basically like a mockery of like it's like WWF making fun of like the finger poke of doom, even though it didn't even happen yet. Boy, it doesn't matter, but I remember that being the first time I saw that and being hyped about it, because I was like, yeah, this is like a cool looking Raw from back in the day. It was all Christmas themed and whatnot. I was seven, guys, cut me some slack. But I got this that night at the merch stand at Survivor Series. So pretty cool stuff that I had to show. And of course, last thing to show here, obviously I didn't get this that night. I got it the following month. When I really, actually, that's a lie. I think I got this for my birthday in 2007. I think I got this and Armageddon from December of 2006. But we have the Survivor Series 2006 DVD. There's your cover there. There is your side bend. There's your back here. And I'm always going to show, I did this in the Survivor Series 2002 review, always going to show the DVD if I have it available to show you guys. But there is your disc, and I still got the insert on the inside, which is worth noting because I did lose a couple inserts over the years with some of my DVDs, because I would take them out, and since they always had a cool front on them like this, I would like place them in my figure arenas. I thought they looked cool, and then sometimes I'd lose them. But there you go. Extras on this DVD. Todd Grisham interviews Lita after her match. Mr. McMahon's Kiss My Ass cartoon. Don't remember what that was about. And you also have the main event of Survivor Series 1987, which I believe is the first or second Survivor Series event. Hulk Hogan, Bam Bam Bigelow, Paul Orndorff, Ken Patera, I don't even know who the hell that is, and Don Morocco versus Andre the Giant, Rick Rude, One Man Gang, Butch Reed, and King Kong Bundy. Very, very cool. I watched this DVD to death back in the day. But there you go. All in all, that is my little haul and merch, if you will. Let me pull up my notes again from the 2006 Survivor Series. But we will get into this show. First things first, let me actually move over here because I want to put, I found the, I know they're low quality, cut me some slack, but this is all that the internet had to offer. I want to put the match cards, the match graphics on the screen as I'm talking about some of these matches. But before we get into these matches, two notes to make here. One, the stage for this show I think is freaking awesome. One of my favorite Survivor Series stages of all time. They used it for 2007 as well, and I think it looks badass. Just wanted to mention it. And I also, before I even get into the show, I should also just remember a couple of notes. Like, I remember we obviously were sitting in 215, which are basically the nosebleeds at Wells Fargo Center, which are not bad seats. I sat there for Extreme Rules 2022. That was for a different reason. That's just because I bought them before Triple H took over creative, and I was like, I want to go to this show, but I don't think it's going to be worth buying expensive seats. And then Triple H took over creative, and I was like, damn, I should have bought better seats. But not bad seats at all. I remember bringing a DX sign as well as a Chris Benoit sign that I drew the United States title on. It was badass. I don't have any pictures. I don't think I have any pictures from this event at all. Some of these early events from 2006, the SmackDown I went to and this, I don't have any like pictures that I took at the show, unfortunately. I don't think I have any. I think the first show I have pictures of is a house show in 2008. I'm dropping my pen all over today in these recordings. But, yeah, so unfortunately I don't have any of those, or I'd flash them on the screen. We'll do that eventually, like, down the line, if we're reviewing a show that I was at. But I also remember Carlito and Charlie Haas wrestling on the dark match, which is listed on Wikipedia. It says it went 5 minutes. I do vividly remember that. You know how, like, even when you're young, you just have very, like, vivid memories of these shows. And I remember this thing, like, the back of my hand. I remember my view for everything during the show. I remember Shawn Michaels running off the side of the stage and then having to catch up with Triple H because it was, like, right down there, like, just great memories. A bunch of little things I can honestly talk about like throughout the show, but I'll just bring them up as we go along. But nonetheless, I also wrote my notes here. There was a guy dead center, hard cam the whole time that had a CZW shirt on, black shirt, yellow CZW logo, which of course was like the promotion in Philadelphia at the time. And he also had a Vince Fears Necro sign, which Necro Butcher, one of the top CZW guys at that time, which I didn't notice back in the day, but I'm rewatching this. And I saw it years ago, but I was just like, it's funny, that guy must have been at the ECW Arena, then known as the Asylum Arena or whatever the hell, New Hambra. I forget what it was. It went through a couple of name changes during those years, did the old ECW Arena, but he was probably there each and every month. Nonetheless, let's get into the card here. As you can see, it's been sitting on your screen for the last couple of minutes. We had the first of three traditional Survivor Series matches. I apologize if I'm looking down at my screen. I'm looking at my notes. But we had the Legends team of the Nature Boy Ric Flair. It's honestly pretty crazy when I look back. Like, I saw Dusty Rhodes. Technically, I saw Dusty Rhodes wrestle in person. Not that he did too much in this match, but like, I was really thinking about it during this rewatch. I was like, that's kind of crazy. Like, saw the American Dream himself doing a little freaking flip, flop, and roll, whatever the hell it's called. Pretty cool. Nonetheless, we had Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes, Ron Simmons, and Sergeant Slaughter alongside Arn Anderson, who was at ringside, literally the enforcer of the match. And I believe they said on commentary, and I remember this too, Roddy Piper was supposed to be in this match because him and Flair were tag champs for a bit there before they lost in the Rated RKO. But I think Piper got injured or something, so this match became a 4-on-4 instead of a 5-on-5. So you had those guys versus the Spirit Squad. Johnny, Kenny, Mikey, Nikki, a.k.a. Dolph, and Mitch was the one chosen to not participate in this matchup. I can tell you one thing, man. This entire show flies by. Like, nothing on this show got any time. The longest match was the main event, Batista and King Booker, which just fell under 14 minutes. But, like, literally this show got no time at all. Like, especially when we get to the Team Cena versus Team Big Show match, it's literally like elimination freaking as fast as you can. There's like five eliminations in like 2.5 minutes, I swear to God. But they spend like 90 seconds in this Legends versus Spirit Squad match literally just focusing on Arn Anderson and Mitch getting thrown out of the matchup because like Mitch grabbed, I think, Ron Simmons' boot. Ron starts chasing him around ringside. Arn Anderson throws him into the post. Then Ron Simmons gets, it was a kabuki mess. Ron Simmons gets counted out during this whole thing. Then the referee throws out Mitch, I think. Then he throws out Arn Anderson too, which gets a bullshit chant, which was hilarious. But they literally spent like a good 90 seconds to 2 minutes on this whole situation, just throwing these guys out. And I'm thinking about it. I'm like, Ron Simmons got counted out, didn't take one bump. Obviously he's old, so they probably had to do that just to get him out of the match because he probably couldn't go down. And then they just decided, well, I guess we'll just throw out Mitch and Arn Anderson while we're at it for whatever reason. But I don't know, I just found that funny. There's only so much to talk about some of these matches because they were literally just elimination freaking derby out there. But where's the I'm on Wikipedia here. What am I trying to say here? Freaking stuttered over my words. Order of elimination, there we go. Lost in my brain. Ron Simmons, as I mentioned, went first by count out, then Sergeant Slaughter was eliminated by Nikki, who I believe he had the freaking, not the Cobra Clutch, but the other submission hold in on Nikki, aka Dolph. And then somebody came from behind, attacked Sergeant Slaughter. I think it was Kenny Dykstra doing like a spin kick to the back of his head, or it was one of the Spirit Squad members. Then they drag a already knocked out Nikki in the Sergeant Slaughter, who pins him, Sergeant Slaughter. So he's eliminated. And then Dusty Rhodes comes in and just pins Nikki's corpse. So Nikki gets eliminated. Then we're down to Dusty Rhodes, Ric Flair versus Kenny and Mikey of the Spirit Squad. Kenny eliminates the American Dream baby, Dusty Rhodes. Then Ric Flair, of all people, it's hilarious how Ric Flair, less than 2 years out from his original retirement, is like the guy who can work the best in this matchup out of the legends, and like is the saving grace. I don't know why, but Flair comes in, gets rid of Mikey, gets rid of Kenny on like a quick small package. It was actually nice. Kenny did the whole drop down thing where somebody would then give you the boot after the Irish whip, but Flair caught him and did a quick roll up. It was sweet, and eliminated Kenny. And then we had Ric Flair tapping out Johnny to the figure four, and then he gets no time to celebrate here as the Spirit Squad beats up Ric Flair. And this was like the curtain call for the Spirit Squad, because soon after this, it might have been the next night on Raw, I honestly forget, but soon after this is when DX literally puts him in a box, slaps a OVW sticker on the box. I don't think it said OVW, it might have said freaking the town, I forget. And then literally like sending him back to developmental. Like, literally, that's what they did, and they wrote the Spirit Squad off television. And then Kenny Dykstra comes back, and he feuds with Flair for a little bit. Kenny Dykstra had some promise there. Well, I'm not saying he had a lot, but he had a little bit of promise. He comes back, works with Flair as a singles guy. I think it's actually, like, him and Gregory Helms versus Flair and Carlito on, like, the WrestleMania 23 dark match. Like, I think you could find it on the DVD for WrestleMania 23 or YouTube or something like that. And then I don't know what happened. I think he was just kind of spinning wheels, and then I don't know, I guess they just released him. Did he go to SmackDown? I feel like he might have got drafted to SmackDown that year and then didn't absolutely nothing at all. I don't know. Kenny Dykstra had a little bit of potential. Always liked using Kenny Dykstra in SmackDown vs. Raw 2008, which was funny because the time that game came out, I'm pretty sure Dykstra was already gone, but it is what it is. Flair got the win for the eliminations there. Then we move into the United States Championship match, Chris Benoit and Chavo Guerrero, and I couldn't help but not laugh at when I was watching the video package for this match, but just kind of be like, oh, that's something, you know, one of those reactions, because like at the time, let me say this first, this whole feud, even though it's like Chavo going after the U.S. title and this, that, and the other, it's kind of centered around Benoit getting in that Guerrero family business. And Chavo and Vicky Guerrero, who was managing Chavo at the time, they wanted nothing to do with Benoit. And Benoit's starting to get suspicious. He's like, it's got something to do with Eddie Guerrero's estate. This is about a year after Eddie Guerrero passed away. And, you know, I'm thinking about this as I'm watching, and I'm like, that's an interesting choice to make that the centerfold of this storyline. Like, I know Eddie Guerrero was the backbone of, you know, Ray's rise to the top in 2006 and the Chavo and Ray storyline that year, so it wasn't anything new bringing up his name and story on television, but I couldn't help but be like, man, when I was a kid, I was like, what the, I don't even know what estate means, and now I'm watching this as a 24-year-old and going, oh, that's an interesting decision to make that, like, the center of attention in this feud. It doesn't surprise me, it just made me laugh, because, like, again, as a kid, I had no idea what that meant. I was just like, oh, he's just defending Eddie Guerrero or something, I don't know, but couldn't help but just be like, that was a interesting decision. But nonetheless, we had Chris Benoit and Chavo Guerrero. Again, not a long matchup. Benoit was just beating up Chavo for the first few minutes of this match. Just classic Benoit, just million miles a minute. Elbows, chops, couple Germans just throwing Chavo Guerrero around. Chavo comes back, gets close to winning the title, hits a frog splash on Benoit. Benoit kicks out. You know, not that that's like a huge surprise. It's not like Chavo went undefeated with the frog splash or anything like that. At some point, Benoit tries to put the sharpshooter in on Chavo. And then Chavo pushes Benoit off. Benoit runs into Vicky Guerrero, who is on the apron, knocks her off. And then something happens. Benoit gets Chavo in the crossface and taps him out to retain the United States Championship. And, you know, one thing I got to mention about this show is John Bradshaw Layfield. Dude, JBL, there he is in the background. Shout out to JBL. I always liked JBL as a wrestler, but I'm going to say something here. Just as good as a commentator, dude. This show alone, JBL was a hell of a commentator, dude. Benoit hits Vicky, wins this matchup, and JBL's going off. I can't, and I know it's kind of funny looking back. Like, I'm a guy who can look at situations very lighthearted, you know. I'm not so structured and serious like a lot of people pretend to be online. So, you know, when JBL's going off in an angrily way on commentary talking about, I can't believe Benoit would hit a woman, and, you know, this was only 2006. It's kind of funny in retrospect. You know, just have a freaking sense of humor. But that wasn't the only thing. I mean, JBL was going off on The Undertaker later in this show for beating the hell out of Mr. Kennedy, going off on Batista for cheating to win the world title. JBL, hell of a commentator, dude. And not just when he would explode and get angry, but literally in the meticulous moments of a matchup where Michael Cole's like, "You've been in this position before. Why don't you give her 2 cents?" And then he actually gives a legit 2 cents. That's the thing about JBL as well. It's not only what he might shit on a guy like Undertaker or Benoit, but you also kind of give him their respect at the same time on commentary. Like, I know what it's like in there. That hurts. He's hurting that. You don't want to be in there with him at this time. Like, JBL is a good commentator. Maybe it's just me. I don't know. I like JBL as a commentator. But after that, we got a backstage segment. We got Todd Grisham. Good old Todd. Who remembers Todd? Who was it? Was it Chris Jericho? What are my thoughts, Todd? I'll tell you what my thoughts are. I think I was like an 05 and it always made me laugh. I don't know. Nonetheless, we have Todd Grisham interviewing the women's champion Lita and one half of the tag team champions Edge. And of course, this was supposed to be Lita's retirement night. Obviously, she came back years later, but this was the last match for a while. So Lita talks about that. She goes off. Edge starts talking about the Team DX versus Team Rated RKO match. But this segment's only worth noting because as that's happening, good old JTG and the late, great Shad Gaspard, Crime Time, sneak behind Edge nice and quiet right in the Lita's locker room. They go in with a box. They come out with some of her stuff. And Edge doesn't catch him. Lita doesn't catch him. Todd Grisham, though, after the interview's over, catches him and is just like, "What are you guys doing?" And JTG just said, "You ain't seen nothing." And that was it. And literally, one of my favorite memories of this show was what happened after. And I mean being at the show was what happened after the matchup, because I just vividly remember every single meticulous moment of Crime Time coming out and selling Lita's stuff to the audience. I'm not gonna lie, it's kind of crazy looking back. Like, I was listening to this, I was watching this, and I'm like, man, they really did Lita dirty on the way out. And she's talked about it, like, all just the stuff with Edge and Matt Hardy and how it affected her and the crowd chanting and this, that, and the other, and how it kind of changed her character on television, like how it actually was kind of a detriment to her and made her want to go. So in retrospect, you know, obviously it sucks, but, you know, she came back, she's had a couple of runs now, so I think, you know, I don't want to say water under the bridge doesn't make any better, but it's not like this ended up being the lasting impression of Lita is what I'm trying to say. So I think you can look back, be like, all right, it was 2006, and you can kind of laugh at some of the jokes, I'm not going to lie, but that's just me. Nonetheless, though, we did have Lita defending the Women's Championship against Mickey James. And, 2006, the rise of Mickey James, her and Trish Stratus had a really good matchup at WrestleMania 22, infamous for many reasons, some reasons that you can no longer find on Peacock, or I don't even think the WrestleMania 22 DVD, I think it was cut on there as well. And if you know, you know, you might be able to find it on YouTube. Correct me if I'm wrong. I haven't watched the Mania 22 DVD in a while, but anybody, you know, if you know, you know, you know what I'm talking about. Nonetheless, the rise of Mickie James in 2006, she already was women's champion that year, then lost it. Did she lose it to Lita? And then Trish won the title at Unforgiven, or was Trish already the champ going in at Unforgiven? I forget the sequence of events, but obviously Trish had just retired 2 months earlier, and now Lita's going out the door as well. And, you know, all due respect to both of these women, both, you know, legitimately great talents. But even for the times, you know, this match sucked. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and be like, you know, it was really good because Lita and Mickie James were in there. You know, I should retrace one thing I just said, though. For the times, it was better than most, and they actually did work a little bit, but, like, it still sucked. Like, I don't care, you know, we're just here, I'm just giving my honest thoughts. This show's many years old, it doesn't matter anymore. They've both had many great matches, this, that, and the third, so it doesn't matter. Everybody stinks it up, you know, some nights, you know, I'm not saying all the men's matches on this show were good, just saying. Sucked. Nonetheless, Mickey James won with a DDT to win the women's championship. Coincidentally, didn't we just talk about Victoria winning the women's title at Survivor Series 2000? It was a suplex. She used a suplex to win the women's title. Nonetheless, Mickey James wins with a good old-fashioned Arn Anderson DDT. He was probably popping huge in the back for that. Did I say Arn Anderson? I don't know why I said he's fresh in my mind. Jake the Snake Roberts. Jake the Snake Roberts probably popping huge wherever he was at the time. Mickey James wins the title. Lita gets on the mic afterwards and blah, blah, blah. The disrespect. This is why I'm leaving. And then Crime Time comes out there. They got a box of Lita's stuff and they start a good old wholesale. His words, not mine. Shad Gaspard's words, the late great, so his words, not mine. And they start raffling off her stuff for some shoot dollars, man. Everybody in the front row, the second, all the way back, everybody's got their dollars out, ready to buy Lita's old stuff from some of her undergarments to her little buddy, which if you've watched the show, you know what I mean when I say little buddy. It was moving a little bit. It was in a sock. There we go. They even sold, this is honestly one of the best parts, they even sold something, I believe they sold some of her panties, to JBL. They're like, is that who, that's Mr. Moneybags, JBL. And JBL said, let me get a, this is hilarious that we're talking about this right now. That's what it's all about. JBL said, let me get a sniff first. And then JBL went, It was the times. And then JBL's like, yo, I don't got any change, so here's a $100 bill. And Shad's like, I got change. And then doesn't give him the change and throws the panties into the crowd. So JBL gets nothing. And then JBL's calling them thugs on commentary. It was the times. And then they have nothing left. They run through everything. But they do have the cardboard box left. So JTG, I believe, said, it's big, it's wide, you can put your head in it, who wants it? Which, of course, got a big pop from the crowd, because they're talking about Lita's stuff, and they sell this box to somebody in the crowd. And I wonder what that person did with that box that night. Like, did they legitimately bring that cardboard box home? Because this is a big cardboard box. There ain't that much room by your feet when you're at a show for that box to be sitting around all night long. But hey, it was the times. What do you want? I'm just calling it as it was. And it was entertaining stuff. Crime Time, great team. Rest in peace, Shad Gaspard. After that, we had a Michael Cole interview with Batista, which basically wasn't an interview at all. Michael Cole just asked a bunch of questions. Batista said nothing other than, I'm leaving tonight with the World Heavyweight Championship. Nice and serious. Big Dave back in the same building. He had to relinquish the title. Is coming for his gold right here tonight at Survivor Series. Excuse me. After that, we probably have the most famous match of this show, and that is the Team G Generation X. D Generation X versus Team Rated RKO. DX consisting of Triple H, Shawn Michaels, CM Punk, Jeff Hardy, who is the Intercontinental Champion, and Matt Hardy, taking on the World Tag Team Champions Edge and Randy Orton, the Cruiserweight Champion Gregory Helms, Johnny Nitro, and Mike Knox. Who remembers Mike Knox? So this is, of course, the, you know, a famous matchup where Philadelphia basically, I will say, took over, because that's like the thing nowadays. Like, oh, the crowd's taking over, but legitimately were chanting CM Punk's name, not just prior to this matchup, but all throughout it, man. Philadelphia, obviously, smart, mark crowd. You know, CM Punk, they've seen him a million times come through Ring of Honor and many other independents, you know, years prior, and being an ECW guy during that time. So the Philadelphia crowd absolutely loved CM Punk, and they let everybody know it. So much so that Triple H put his arm around CM Punk and said, he needs to have a question answered. CM Punk said, are you ready? Just like that. And he got a huge pop. Punk looked awesome. CM Punk during these days, with the black hair and the red trunks, just the ECW CM Punk, there was just something cool about CM Punk, man. I mean, there still is. You know, we could be 48 hours away from his WWE return, but young, you know, fresh on the scene, CM Punk in WWE, just badass, man. Just badass. A couple of other notes here before we get into the match, really just one other note, and that is the Rated RKO theme song. I just wanted to talk about it because I wrote it down in my notes. And do yourself a favor. I don't know if this is on Apple Music or Spotify, but if it is, I really need to add it to my gym playlist. It's just their two themes mixed together. It's just Metalingus and Burn of My Light, and they put them together. But the Rated RKO theme song, chef's kiss. Absolutely badass. And everybody just looked awesome, man. Edge and Randy Orton with the World Tag Team titles coming to the ring. What a great pairing. What a great pairing they were. Nonetheless, What do I got here? What do I got? I just wanted to go back on Wikipedia so I don't forget anything. This match kicks off, and just another... There's multiple reasons why this match is remembered. One, because of the CM Punk stuff. Two, because of the first few moments of this matchup. A second in, basically, Shawn Michaels super kicks Mike Knox. Well, first, I should say, Kelly got up on the apron, and Triple H was like, yeah, show the puppies. This is what happened, guys. I'm just calling the action. And then Mike Knox gets in there. It's like, what are you doing? This, that, and the third. Shawn Michaels super kicks Mike Knox. 1, 2, 3. In and out of there. Mike Knox lasts absolutely no time in this matchup. Gets no action at all besides getting super kicked. And then they bury him just a little bit more as Shawn Michaels goes to his corner to ask who was that. And Triple H is like, is Mike Knox. Shawn Michaels is like, is he in the match? He's like, yeah, he's in the match from ECW or something like that. I don't know who Mike Knox pissed off before he got to Philadelphia that night, but clearly did not have a good night in this matchup. Then right after that, Johnny Nitro gets in the ring, who was accompanied by Melina at the time. Shawn Michaels and Nitro have a little exchange. Michaels slides to the outside, puts his arm around Melina. Melina's like, yeah, Johnny Nitro. Then they look at each other. Melina screams, Shawn Michaels screams, which just makes it more funny. And then they get back in the ring. And then it's pretty serious from here. But just a hot 90 seconds of like a surprise moment with Mike Knox and a little bit of comedy with Melina and Shawn Michaels. Just entertaining stuff. Those three reasons. And multiple. I mean, it was a clean sweep. You guys know what happened. I don't know why I'm building up to it like you guys haven't watched this show. It was a clean sweep. This is one of the most famous, I would say, in my opinion, traditional Survivor Series matches of all time. And Team DX with the Hardys and CM Punk, one of the most famous and remembered teams in Survivor Series history, I will personally say myself. But CM Punk gets an elimination in this thing, which Philadelphia was a big fan of. Tapped out Johnny Nitro to the old Anaconda Vice. Gregory Helms went. Matt Hardy hit him with a twist of fate. Jeff Hardy did a swanton, and then Matt Hardy got the pin over Gregory Helms. They were feuding at the time, not over the Cruiserweight Championship, but on SmackDown. And I remember them having some pretty solid matches from what I remember. I mean, it's been some time since I've watched them, but I do remember that I think they fought at No Mercy the month prior and had a solid matchup, so maybe something I'll have to go back and watch soon enough. But then it comes down to Team DX in their entirety versus Rated RKO, and Edge and Orton are like, F this, we're out of here. So they start marching their way up the entrance. The Hardy Boys follow them, get back into the ring. Couple of moves on Edge. I believe CM Punk hits the knee, his signature knee to Edge in the corner. Edge falls out of it. Or I should say, he does that. Then Matt Hardy drops down. Jeff Hardy does the, you know, hop on Matt's back and then jumps into the opponent in the corner. What are they? Poetry in motion? Poetry in motion on Edge. Took me a second there. And then Edge, dazed and confused, comes out of the corner. I think, did Triple H hit the pedigree? Shawn Michaels hit the super kick. I don't believe Triple H hit the pedigree. I think it was just a Michaels super kick. And then Edge gets pinned after eating all those moves. And then it's down to Randy Orton, who tries to flee through the crowd. The Hardys and CM Punk go after him. They throw Orton back into the ring, who Orton gets met with a super kick. And then a pedigree by Triple H. What a 1-2 combo, man. Getting a super kick from Shawn Michaels and a pedigree from Triple H. That's like a massive TKO and like freaking Super Smash Bros. Or something, I don't know. And then it's the clean sweep, man. Team DX, clean sweep to Rated RKO. And it was a fun night, man. I have so many vivid memories. Like, you just, when I say vivid memories, I literally mean, like, I remember my view as these things happen. Like, I remember DX, or I should say, I remember Rated RKO leaving up the entrance. I remember looking in the crowd, even though it was on the other side of the arena, and seeing Orton trying to flay. Like, you know what I mean? Everybody who's ever been to shows remembers those little things. Their view when something happened, and then you go back and watch it on, you know, TV or DVD, Peacock, whatever, and you're like, oh, that's cool. I'm like seeing it new for the first time, but I saw it, and you remember your view. That's what I mean when I say vivid memories, man. I remember so many specifics about this match, and it's a super fun matchup, man, and it's not long at all. It goes just under 12 minutes, and again, nothing on this show was that long. This whole show just flew by, but this was a super fun matchup, man. Probably the match of the night, honestly, just because it was super fun and, like, all the way through, historic for all the reasons I already said. So, great stuff there overall. We're going to pause for a second, get a little sip of the good stuff in the old Return of the Jedi mug. This is not the Rogue Nation channel, but, yeah, it is what it is. After that, we move into the first blood match between Mr. Kennedy and The Undertaker. This match went 9 minutes. I just wanted to check Wikipedia right there. But before, they show the video package, and then they show Mr. Kennedy backstage being interviewed by Crystal? Was that the name? Wasn't that the woman who was going to marry Teddy Long, and then Teddy Long like had a heart attack in the ring? Something along those lines, like on SmackDown 2007. I think it was her. Maybe it was somebody else. But she's interviewing Mr. Kennedy before Kennedy even gets like a couple sentences out. MVP comes up. Good old Montel Vontavious Porter, who's fresh on the scene on Friday Night SmackDown. Just debuted a month prior at No Mercy. And Mr. Kennedy and MVP were kind of intertwined at the time, you know, teaming up because Kennedy was feuding with Taker, MVP was feuding with Kane, and they allude to in this match that twice, or I should say in this backstage segment, twice now MVP had been thrown to the wolves, meaning the Brothers of Destruction, by Mr. Kennedy on SmackDown, and MVP's just reminded him, being like, listen, I remember that, but just so you know, it's water under the bridge. And really, they're laying the groundwork for what's going to happen in the following matchup, which again is the first blood between Mr. Kennedy and The Undertaker. Here's a little, another vivid memory. I think after the Team DX rated RKO match, I went to the bathroom during this show and missed Mr. Kennedy's entrance, but we're walking through the tunnel just as the gong hits for The Undertaker's music, and I literally stopped my tracks, and I was like, literally got scared. I was like, I've been watching this WWE for well over a year at this point, seeing The Undertaker each and every week is on television, but being there for the first time in person to hear that gong and see The Undertaker, I literally was like, yeah, do you just want to hang here for a second? And I was like, okay, I'll go back out. But I got nervous at the moment. I was like, yo, it's kind of crazy, The Undertaker coming out. But what were we talking about? Kennedy and I always said Shawn Michaels. Kennedy and The Undertaker. Mr. Kennedy exposed a couple of turnbuckles on his way to the ring during his entrance, and then the match kicks off, and they're basically going back and forth, just brawling for the first few minutes. Again, this match only went 9 minutes, it wasn't super long. Undertaker was just kind of beating the hell out of Kennedy, threw him over the Spanish announce table, just trying to really bust him open, hitting his head on the announce table, ragdolling him around the ringside, just kind of beating him up for the first few minutes, and then, because it's just brawling for like the first, like, 5-6 minutes of this match. Then we start to hit the climax of the match, if you will. Mr. Kennedy is coughing up blood at ringside, which JBL started to allude to this, and Michael Cole started to allude to this on commentary, because Undertaker was really starting to go after the ribs of Mr. Kennedy at some point. JBL starts talking like, oh my god, Undertaker is a sick, twisted human being. He's trying to make him bleed internally and cough up blood, which then actually, you know, does end up happening in the match. Mr. Kennedy rolls to the outside, the ref's checking on the Undertaker for something, and Kennedy coughs up blood onto the floor, which would count as, you know, losing the matchup and drawing first blood. MVP rolls out there, or runs down there with a towel, wipes up the blood, helps Mr. Kennedy recoup. But then, as he's like, yeah, we don't need this, he's about to walk Mr. Kennedy to the back and flee the matchup. MVP, getting his comeuppance, if you will, after Kennedy already threw him to the wolves on SmackDown numerous times, MVP throws Mr. Kennedy back into the ring, into the waiting arms of The Undertaker, which at the time you might be watching this and going, MVP is a heel. It's kind of like a cheerish thing to do, like a good guy thing where you just throw him to The Undertaker, like, hey, thanks. But MVP also gets involved once again, gets a steel chair, trying to get involved in this match. The referee is kind of having like a tug of war with the steel chair, trying to stop MVP from using it. MVP shoves him off, swings the steel chair. It looked like he might have been going for Mr. Kennedy, which is what they allude to on commentary. Like, MVP was trying to screw over Mr. Kennedy because he had beef with him for throwing him to the Brothers of Destruction a few weeks ago on SmackDown. But Mr. Kennedy ducks, MVP wails The Undertaker with a chair. He's like, oh shit, I didn't mean to do that. And then Undertaker comes up, The Undertaker is busted wide open, and Mr. Kennedy starts hammering away on him. Moments later, the referee is back up, sees The Undertaker's busted open, ring the bell, Mr. Kennedy defeats The Undertaker, which is now two victories in a row, because he beats The Undertaker by disqualification at No Mercy, then beats him in this first blood matchup at Survivor Series. And of course, Undertaker kind of wins the feud, if you will, at Armageddon when they have the last ride match, which is pretty a hell of a matchup from what I remember. At some point, I think it's during the matchup, obviously, Taker like throws Mr. Kennedy like off part of the stage. Like, it's sick. I haven't watched it in years. Maybe we'll watch that since December's coming up, and you know, that's the old Armageddon month. Maybe we'll watch that soon as the follow-up. Let me know down below in the comments on YouTube if we should do that. But Undertaker ends up winning this feud, but Kennedy wins at Survivor Series. So after that, Kennedy's beating down on Undertaker. Microphone comes back down. Kennedy gets in his face. And the winner, all groggy, Mr. Undertaker grabs the throat. Undertaker beats the hell out of Mr. Kennedy. And this is where things get a little extreme in the city of Philadelphia, if you know what I'm saying. Taker kind of put the arm up for the chair shot. Nothing wrong with that, because, you know, he's you know, even then, he was, you know, older in his career. But Mr. Kennedy, he ate a gnarly chair shot to the head. Unprotection, 1,000%. I said this in the thing 2 weeks ago, but I'll say it again. If that happened nowadays, the freaking safety police would be crying the blues on social media. But it's what it is. Nonetheless, Undertaker wails Mr. Kennedy with a chair shot. Kennedy's now busted wide open. Taker follows it up with a tombstone pile driver after beating down Kennedy a little bit more. And gets the last laugh that night. But the crowd was chanting holy shit because Taker wailed Mr. Kennedy with that chair. And it's almost one of those, like, welcome to the big time, you know, you're earning my respect, but you gotta earn a little bit more, you know, moments. Because, you know, after the feud with Taker, Kennedy goes on, he competes for the World Heavyweight Championship against Batista at the Rumble, obviously loses, but you don't put somebody in that spot unless you got big plans for him, right? Kennedy goes on to win Money in the Bank, and then unfortunately, you know, injuries really derail his momentum from there, and that's basically, you know, that's basically it for Kennedy's career in WWE. I mean, he still did some stuff, you know, late 07, feuded with Shawn Michaels, Intercontinental title programs, but nothing really, you know, super substantial, unfortunately for him, which sucks looking back, because Kennedy, MVP as well, but especially Mr. Kennedy, man, could have been huge, and just, you know, whether it's backstage stuff that's been rumored for years, or just the injuries that he had, just really derailed his momentum. But that first run of Kennedy from late 05 when he comes in up until, you know, post WrestleMania 27 or WrestleMania 23 in 2007, great run for Mr. Kennedy, man. I really like the guy, you know, even during then. Obviously, I was 7 years old. I was a kid. And, you know, you normally when you're a kid, you're like, I hate the bad guys. But there's always those few. You're like, man, I kind of like that dude. One of my guys was Mr. Kennedy. I was like, yeah, this guy's pretty entertaining. Because he would also just be funny at times. So a kid me was a Mr. Kennedy fan, but yeah, Taker loses this matchup, but gets the last laugh over good old Ken Kennedy. Next up on this show, they were really just moving right along. There wasn't much in between any of these matches, either. This show just, again, just really flew by in the rewatch. But we have our final of three, 5-on-5. Well, the first one was a 5-on-5, but Survivor Series elimination matches, Team Cena versus Team Big Show. Big Show, of course, the ECW champion at the time, alongside Finlay, MVP, Test, and at the time, undefeated Umaga. Who said that? Let me know down in the comments. If you know your history, who said Umaga's name like that? Umaga! But, and then opposing him again, Team Cena, John Cena, the WWE champion at the time, alongside Bobby Lashley, Kane, Rob Van Dam, and Sabu. Sabu, it's just so funny looking back, seeing Sabu here and there during this era when he was on ECW, because just seeing him mixed in with, like, guys like Bobby Lashley, just looks so out of place looking back at it. But this was the matchup that I was talking about that was literally elimination derby. Like, first off, Umaga doesn't last. He's literally in this match for 58 seconds, according to Wikipedia, and basically is that. He gets himself disqualified. I think he hits John Cena with a monitor, with the announce table monitor in the head, which obviously ended up, you know, coming back together because these guys end up working at New Year's Revolution and Royal Rumble in that epic legendary last man standing match that I posted on Instagram a couple of weeks ago, and I was just like, oh man, they don't make them like they used to. Because I watched Cena and Umaga's match from the Rumble. I literally watched that and Batista and Mr. Kennedy. I didn't watch anything else on the show, but I just, for some reason, was feeling that stuff. And I watched Umaga and Cena recently from the Rumble that from 2007. I was like, ah, they don't make them like they used to, man. They were beating the hell out of each other. But nonetheless, of course, Umaga undefeated at that time, so if he was going to be on the losing end in this matchup, they had to, you know, find a way for him to not be pinned or submitted. So make him go crazy and get himself disqualified was the route they go with. Then, you know, according to Wikipedia here, and I know Wikipedia is not accurate all the time, but it's good enough basis for this when I have most of it in my head, just for remembrance. We get about 4 or 5 minutes of action, and then the Elimination Derby starts. MVP gets chokeslammed by Kane. RVD, 5-star frog splash. RVD eliminates MVP. Test comes in, wails RVD with a big boot. Looked awesome. Test eliminates RVD. Then who is next? Sabu. So Test goes to the outside. Test throws Sabu to the outside. Then goes after him. Bobby Lashley, as they're on the outside, spears Test. Test goes back to the ring. Sabu, I think, might have did like a leg drop over the top rope, then did a springboard tornado DDT. Test is eliminated. Then Big Show comes in, chokeslam, eliminates Sabu. Then it's Big Show and Kane face-to-face for like 20 seconds. And then Hornswoggle just runs in the ring and just gets in the middle of them as a distraction. Referee chases Hornswoggle out. Finley, who got another shillelagh after his first one was taken during his entrance from Hornswoggle, wails Kane in the back. Big Show chokeslams Kane, and now Kane's eliminated. So we literally got five eliminations. MVP, RVD, Test, Sabu, and Kane literally within like 2.5 minutes. It was elimination derby out there. This match just screamed, we are crunched for time. And you can go watch the show on Peacock, and it tells you the show is like 2 hours and 30 something minutes. Like, it's not like it went to the brink of 3 hours. I don't know how that exactly worked, if they had all 3 hours and what the case was. I don't know any of those logistics, but I know it was elimination derby in this matchup up until the final two, which still only went another 2-3 minutes or so. It was Big Show and Finlay versus Lashley and Cena. You know, Lashley, somebody who they were really trying to raise the stock of at the time, that he had just moved to ECW. This was 1 week before the infamous December to Dismember ECW pay-per-view, where Lashley would win the ECW title from the Big Show. But Lashley, I think, eliminates Finlay. Correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah, Lashley pins Finlay because Hornswoggle gets in the ring. Finlay literally like throws Hornswoggle at Lashley. I think he ducks. Cena catches him. Lashley spears Finlay and pins him, eliminates him. And then it's down to Lashley and Cena versus the Big Show, which Big Show, I think, has Cena in a chokeslam, or at least choking him. Lashley comes in, shoulder blocks Big Show, gets him off balance. And then Cena muscles up the 500-something-pound Big Show with a good old FU, and then pins the ECW champion. John Cena and Bobby Lashley are your sole survivors. But definitely not a match you're going to remember for the quality of it. You know, it is kind of crazy looking at these two, because like the substance of these matches, all three traditional Survivor Series matches, weren't that hot. When like the year prior, we only got one, but it was Team Raw versus Team SmackDown, back when brand versus brand was actually cool. And like it got some time. I'll go on, I can click three buttons and we'll be there. How long did that match go previously? The year before, the 5-on-5 match at least got a solid 25 minutes. Now, I know this was that was one match compared to three traditional Survivor Series matches, but Elimination Derby is all you could say about all the traditional Survivor Series matches at that show, but especially Team Cena and Big Show. And then, like I said, the following week is the infamous December to Dismember pay-per-view, which is literally so funny looking back on, and I'll get it eventually. Like, I'm sure we'll talk about that show eventually here on the podcast. They know that show was so bad just after it happened, because when you have the December to Dismember DVD, which I do have, the only two matches listed on the back of that, because like they always would have, there's literally every single pay-per-view during that time would always have the entire match card listed on the back of the DVD cover. You get the December to Dismember DVD, and the only two matches it lists on the back is the Extreme Elimination Chamber and the Hardys versus Eminem. Nothing else from that abysmal show is even listed on the back of the DVD, because they know how bad it was. But this was 1 week prior to that, because they just booked it randomly at the beginning of December. And then like 2 weeks after that, SmackDown had Armageddon. Busy pay-per-view schedule at the time. But yeah, there's that match. Team Cena obviously defeats Team Big Show. Philadelphia was certainly not endearing themselves to John Cena. He was definitely getting a lot of boos that night in Philly. I didn't even recognize at the time, you know, from my vivid memories, I was a Cena fan. And then, of course, we move in to the main event of Survivor Series 2006, the World Heavyweight Championship match between King Booker and the Animal, Dave Batista. And the stipulation was already there before this matchup that if Batista lost, this was his last opportunity. So if he lost, he would never challenge for the World Championship again. But good old Theodore Long, playa, came out before the matchup and added a little salt to the ingredients here. Made it a little bit more spicy, a little bit more interesting, if you will. As JBL said on commentary moments after, raised the stakes even more. Teddy Long said, if Batista loses, last opportunity, that's it. But if King Booker gets himself counted out or disqualified, he will lose the World Heavyweight Championship. So we were getting a definite winner to conclude the, well, I shouldn't say to conclude, same word, Not really. I shouldn't say conclude this feud, because they go on to have the tag match with Finlay and Cena at Armageddon, but basically get close to concluding this feud. This is basically the climax, and then, you know, Armageddon was just the, we just need to fill something on this show. Main event, because they could have just did another world title match, but nonetheless. Batista and King Booker. Batista wastes no time. King Booker doesn't even get to the ring, and Batista goes after him. So, again, I want to know, like, I don't know if they were, like, short for time, and they were like, yo, Batista, when he comes out, just go beat him up in the aisleway, and we'll start the match there, because everything was just moving on this show, man. This is not a show you're going to go back and rewatch and be like, man, this is dragging on, because there's no time for it to drag on. Like, it's 2.5 hours, but feels like 90 minutes, I swear to God. Nonetheless, Batista goes after King Booker in the aisleway. The matchup begins, and it's nothing special. You know, it's a solid main event. Booker gets all his shit in. Batista gets all his shit in. Batista does a shoulder block from the top rope, which was rare occurrence at the time. He would pull that out during big matches, but JBL and Michael Cole said it on commentary. I don't know if they were right, if they were just hyped it up in the moment. They said it was the first time Batista did that, but I feel like he might have, you know, came off the top in his matches with Triple H and JBL himself. Like, I feel like he probably did it before, but nonetheless, it was only a shoulder block. It's not like Batista went up there and did a Lesnar shooting star or anything like that, but they were on commentary like, I've never seen Batista do that before. They were marking out for it, which, hey, you know, good on you. Hype it up. But eventually, King Booker gets Batista bombed. Batista goes for the pin. King Booker grabs the ropes. Batista's like, what the fuck, dude? That was my shot. I just lost the world title. Queen Charmel tries to get involved after she hands King Booker the World Heavyweight Championship behind the ref's back. Queen Charmel gets in the ring. Referee's trying to get her out. This is obviously so King Booker can use the World Championship behind the ref's back and not get caught and not get disqualified and lose his championship. But Batista sees it coming. Batista ducks. Kick to the gut. Batista, after being screwed over by King Booker at SummerSlam, it was a disqualification. He had gotten hit with the scepter of King Booker. He had gotten cheated and disqualified from Booker time and time again. Batista finally gives him a taste of his own medicine, hits King Booker in the skull with his own world championship, gets rid of the evidence, and Batista, 1, 2, 3, wins his second world heavyweight championship. The same building that 11 months prior, he relinquished the world championship, comes back to the Wachovia Center in Philadelphia, and it all begins again for the Animal. And I think, looking back, Batista was one of my favorites, and I think being there for that pillared, you know, start and finish for Batista's world championship story in 2006 is definitely one big reason why he is in my top three of all time. I say it all the time, but, you know, ask me on different days, I'll give you different answers. Who's two, who's three? Rey Mysterio is a solidified number one, no questions asked. Then it's Edge and Batista. Who I like better? Ask me on different days, I'll give you different answers. But Batista, always one of my favorites as a kid, and then also having that memory of the SmackDown in 2006 and then Survivor Series, that, you know, the show we're talking about right now, definitely adds to that. You know, same thing with Kurt Angle. Always one of my favorites, but because I was there when he won the world title, and I vividly remember the fireworks and the confetti and all that stuff, that just is like the extra boost to like Kurt Angle top five for me of all time. But and that was Survivor Series, man. You know, again, nothing too crazy from an in-ring standpoint, but a fun show to watch, I will say. Like, it flies by, as I mentioned, and not in a bad way. Nothing drags. I think it's a good show. Again, for me personally, nostalgia, favoritism, because, you know, obviously I was just there, I was a kid, and I have so many vivid memories. One of my favorite Survivor Series of all time. Not going to push it over the edge just because I was there and say it was the greatest of all time, because it's obviously not. I think 2002 was the greatest Survivor Series of all time, which, if you didn't know, 2 weeks ago here on the Ruthless Discussions podcast, we did a 2002 Survivor Series review, so you should definitely go check that out. But yeah, man, that was the 2006 Survivor Series. Feel like I had one thing I wanted to mention about this show. Maybe I don't have anything else to mention. I don't know. Maybe it was about the Batista thing. I think I was just going to use it as a segue to plug today's podcast to the first one I uploaded today. Shameless plug. But Batista wins the world title, obviously, and that kicks off his second run into WrestleMania 23, where he fights The Undertaker, which earlier today I just said is one of the greatest rivalries of the Ruthless Aggression era. In my personal opinion, I still, all these years later, don't think Batista and Taker's feud in 07 gets the respect it deserves. Nothing but banger matches and moments all along the way. So go check out today's first podcast that I uploaded this morning. This is going to be more of a Thanksgiving night upload. So you get one to start your morning. You know, you can have the Macy's Day Parade and the podcast on. You can double screen it with your little coffee. At least that's what I would do. A little coffee, you know. I'm addicted to the caffeine over here. And then Thanksgiving night, you know, you're chilling out after dinner, maybe heating up some leftovers, and you can watch this. You know, that's what I would do. That's what I would do, and I hope that's what you're doing right now. But I don't know what next week's podcast topic is going to be. I do have an idea, but I don't want to say it yet because it might change. So don't know what the topic's going to be next week, but just in general, guys, let me know down below in the comments what should we what we should talk about here on the Ruthless Discussions podcast in future episodes. Doesn't have to be next week, just in general. What do you guys want to see discussions had during the Ruthless Aggression era? Let me know down below in the comments, and I hope you guys enjoyed both uploads today. Again, I apologize for no podcast last week, but we doubled up today, and I hope I delivered in the fullest way. Be sure to leave a like and subscribe down below. I hope you guys enjoyed it, and I'll see you guys in the next video and the next podcast. Peace.